Here's what happened on the most recent episode of the Let's Go Eat Show Double Shot. We have four different Diet Coke varietals, and we're going to taste test them to decide which is the best.
Why am I sitting across the table from Gina? I don't get that.
I don't know.
I was looking forward to the thin cans, because that's part of the appeal of this, is they come in the thin can.
They didn't call it bloody orange. They didn't call it bleeding orange. Hemorrhaging orange.
I just burped and you didn't even know. It's possible to do it that way.
Pin a rose on your nose.
It is possible.
I want you by the end of this to just belch what? Into the microphone.
No. What?
She tried her hardest.
Nobody heard that. Oh, there we go.
Yay. To listen to this episode and help support this podcast, go to patreon.com/letsgoeatshow. Thank you.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the Let's Go Eat Show podcast. Hi, I'm Bill Allred, and guess what? We're going to give Chris Van Oker another go. Chris Van Oker, famed Salt Lake City newsman, the News Vulcan, people call him. I interviewed him for this podcast some years ago, and it was terrible. I'd like to blame all of that on Chris, but really it was my fault. I didn't know how to run the show at that time. When you have recalcitrant guests, there is another way to talk to them. But I just insisted on trying to ask him questions that he didn't want to answer. Well, he's on the show this time. He's redeemed himself, and I think I've redeemed myself, with an interesting interview with Chris Van Oker of the Van Oker Group, the titular member of the Van Oker Group. And I hope you enjoy it. I had a great time talking to him. And I also had a great time at the Rose Establishment on 4th West to 2nd South eating avocado toast. I know it sounds precious. I know it sounds twee. I know it sounds like we should be on Portlandia. But really, it was goddamn delicious. So, here it is. Oh, I should remind you. Go to wherever you find your podcasts and give us a good rating. Go to iTunes and vote on for us there. And go to patreon.com for special material. Okay? I think I got all of that out of the way. And now, without further ado, let's go talk to Chris Van Oker, the News Vulcan.
What kind of coffee was this?
It's just drip coffee. Just straight ahead. I don't know what roast it is, though. You like it?
I haven't tried it yet. It looks good.
We'll have to ask them when they come over. But it was just from a big. Has the show started? Okay, the show started.
This coffee looks like if we were on a Comedians in Cars getting coffee with Jerry Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. Have you ever watched that?
Sat down. Love that show.
Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, our guest on the Let's Go Eat show this time is Jerry Seinfeld. Hi, Jerry.
So what's the deal with coffee?
Our guest is Chris Van Oker, the indomitable.
What does that mean?
Not
nothing.
Able to be dominated.
Can you hear? Are you okay?
That's true.
Yeah. You can hear okay?
And I can be dominated.
Yeah. You can hear okay? Because apparently you can't, because you haven't answered my question. I've said three times, can you hear okay?
Are we going to take that tone right off the bat?
Chris Van Oker, and we're talking about the coffee. We'll ask... I've already forgotten his name.
Brian?
Brian. We'll ask Brian when he comes over what kind of coffee it is exactly.
What kind of bean?
But it's very dark, black, rich coffee. And Mr. Van Oker, the News Vulcan, drinks tea. Always just tea, black tea in the morning, green tea at night, you said.
Yeah, I actually studied overseas when I was much younger in Scotland. And I got on the tea bandwagon and never got off.
Yeah, they drink a lot of tea and a lot of other stuff in Scotland, but they're...
And I did try the haggis, but that didn't stick.
I tried haggis once, too, and I expected it to be awful. Well, I think there's awful in it. Well, that's a good joke, isn't it? I thought it was going to be terrible, and I rather liked it.
I don't get it.
What to explain to Dylan what haggis is.
I'm not sure I can, but it's a meat product with lots of kind of nasty bits in it.
It's got grain in it, probably barley.
It has something to do with a stomach.
Well, they put it in a sheep's intestine, the traditional way. I think it's a sheep's intestine. And, you know, like a, so, like, so it's like a sausage.
if you're vegan, you're not going to be eating it.
No, no.
Although I think they make a vegetarian one now.
Probably. Mr. Van Oker, thanks for doing this. We're at the, it's called the Rose Establishment.
Yep.
On 4th West, and I can tell you are a habitué of this establishment. You come here all the time because everybody knows your name, and they say, and you say the usual, and they say, very good, Mr. Van Oker.
Well, they don't exactly say Mr. Van Oker, but no, this is kind of my go-to place. I'm here once or twice a week. I have referred to myself on Instagram mm-hmm. as the Rose Establishment's oldest hipster and his avocado toast.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have avocado toast. It is the hipster thing to do these days. And I've done it at home myself, actually. Tried to, you know, do it. And it was okay. But I don't think I've ever ordered it at a restaurant. So I'm looking forward to the avocado toast. How would you describe this place, Chris?
I'm a believer that a little bit like people, but that certain places have good karma for whatever reason. The ambiance, which is a word I don't really love. The staff here is great.
How about the mise en scène? I don't know why I feel very highfalutin sitting here with you today. I don't know why. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And the staff's great. They've become friends. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a friend of mine who likes certain places, he refers to Hemingway's, what is it, a well-lighted place? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it is for me. Mm-hmm. And I come here on the weekends with my, either the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, and I just camp out.
I love that.
It's very big city hipster coffee. Like, I'd go to, this place would be in Brooklyn, I think. It seems like that.
Yeah, the hipster scene in Brooklyn.
Except the avocado toast would be...
Well, everything would be three times as much in price, but...
And they have... I checked the menu. I should have brought one over, but they have delicious-looking cookies here. And I assume they make them here.
I'm a little afraid to say that it's one of the best chocolate chip cookies in town because now there'll be a run on them and I'll be shut out.
For those of you who are still trying to place this in your mind, maybe you would remember this place as, at one time, Big City Soup. And it was a very popular place. I came here a couple of times for lunch to meet people for like a business lunch, and I almost couldn't sit down. And I don't know why it went away exactly, but it did. But this place seems to do pretty well.
On the weekends, the line will be pretty much steady to the door, and sometimes when it warms up in a few weeks, they'll have outside seating too.
So you know when to come, so that you can get a table and camp out?
I think I do, but it never works out in reality. Yeah. Much like my life.
But it never works out, much like my life. Well, we should talk about that a little bit, but in a way that I want you to be comfortable.
Should we talk about the, what is it, what animal is in the room? Is it a bear, a lion?
I don't know that.
The elephant in the room.
Oh, the elephant, yes.
Which is,
hey,
this is my second time appearing on your hugely popular podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And how should we describe the first...
You know, I don't remember it as being as bad as you do. I remember we were at Eggs in the City, and we talked about your life. But you are a guarded person, and you don't want to. You know, sort of the purpose of this podcast is to talk about people's, you know, what they do and how they feel about things, and you are reticent to express some of that.
What do you mean by that?
See.
I'm a people person.
Yeah, right.
I wear my emotions on my sleeve.
No, you sure don't. You sure don't.
I just
don't.
Wanted to see how it sounded saying that for the first and only time in my life.
I'll be honest. So, I'll be frank with you. So you are not the worst guest we've ever had on the Let's Go Eat Show.
Oh, by no means, no.
But
we won't say who. I don't remember.
I could name a few others.
Okay.
And this is Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
That's Bill and his son, Dylan.
Linda, do you know what kind of coffee? This is the drip coffee, but do you know what kind it is? Can you find out from Brian? Thank you. So, anyway, this is the way I would describe the episode that you were on before. God, how many years ago? 5 years ago? 6 years ago?
Maybe, yeah.
Six. Is that I spent the entire episode trying to drag stuff out of you that you just would not.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
I don't know what any of those words are.
Ethiopian and what?
Uji Herchai.
I don't know what that is, but it's good. Thank you.
That's something they made up.
How is it, by the way?
It's really good.
It is good. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I spent the entire episode trying to get you to open up and reveal certain things about yourself. And I mean, the purpose of this is not to embarrass anyone.
I try to make people cry as much as possible.
But you just you keep things very close.
It's kind of good cop, bad cop with you two.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? So it can be sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
You figured it out. You've cracked the code.
So let's just start here from my notes.
But the title of this episode will be Chris Van Oker.
Redux.
Redemption.
A redemption.
Oh, and you know, I do believe actually in the redemption of souls.
You
do? I'm not the most religious person in the world. But I do believe in that.
Did you have religious training when you grew up? Or your dad is a famous news guy, Sandra Van Oker. Did any religion?
It's funny. On the way here, I was listening to Adam Sandler was doing a radio interview. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the concept of being Jewish. Mm-hmm. But the way they phrased it was Jew-ish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so my background, even though we weren't really religious, was Judaism.
Yeah.
And as I get older, I've been attracted to Buddhism and some of the practices there. And I was explaining to my friend Louis Borgnick about this, and he's Jewish.
I know Lou. Sure.
Great guy. Tells awful old man Jewish jokes.
Yeah.
And so I told him about, you know, being Jewish and being interested in Buddhism. And he said, oh, you're a Boo Jew, which I thought was a brilliant term.
Yep.
That was also, wasn't that what the coffee was called?
Yeah. Now, that's interesting because I've looked into Buddhism myself, probably not as thoroughly as you have. I would be a Buddhist if I had the time. Although my friend Brad Wheeler has been going to the Zen Center down here, former judge.
Zimmerman.
Yeah, Judge Zimmerman, right. Who is now like full-blown Zen Buddhist sensei or whatever they call them. And they have a Zen center. And I think Zen Buddhism is sort of more accessible.
Last fall, I finally got to go to Japan, which was on my bucket list. And I did a weekend at a place called Mount Koya. And really the only place to stay there is they've got various Buddhist temple lodgings.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a weekend there. Very pleasant, all vegetarian food, beautifully done, tasty, but fairly sparse.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized after that weekend, which was a great experience, that I'm no Buddhist. I think I'm too type A.
Mm-hmm.
So I can try the meditation, I can do some of that, but I learned a few things and it was so pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful area, I think.
See there, I opened up.
That was excellent.
Good job, Chris.
Can I go now?
Yep, you're excused. You can have a bite of your toast.
Just
before you leave the Buddhist thing, you went through a phase when you got back from Nepal.
I still intend to pursue that.
That's cool.
Now, I have a little Buddha on my desk at work. I have a few Buddha busts and statues at home.
One thing I noticed changed was at the end of your email signature after you came back from Nepal, when you hiked up Everest, changed to Namaste.
Yeah, I used to put
Namaste.
It's
still there, I think.
No, it might be. I don't know.
I think it still is.
So, Chris Van Oker was here in Salt Lake area as a news person for 20 years?
Decades, yeah.
Yeah. And then you became... you were well known in this town. You could not go anywhere, probably, like Rod Decker can't, or now Mary Nichols, and you know, you any place you go, people say, "Oh, it's that news guy, Chris Van Oker."
They might say that, but maybe, perhaps, in not such a positive manner. Oh
no, that's bullshit. You know that
potty mouth.
People like you.
People on the street like you. Now, those of us who know you and are your friends, we talk about you like that.
Yeah.
And so, about the first episode.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter why you left here, to me. I'm not going to ask you about that. But you went to work as a news guy in another market, doing much the same kind of work that you were doing here. Yeah?
I went to Columbus, Ohio, which is the capital of Ohio. So the state house was there, and I covered the legislature and politics and some special projects. But I spent a fair amount of time interviewing and covering both John Kasich,
the governor.
Yeah, who I am really impressed with.
And he was also a senator, is that right?
He was a congressman before. And he ran for president the last time around. It wouldn't surprise me if he went again in 2020, challenged Trump.
Because I know he doesn't like him.
No, he doesn't. And also, I covered Sherrod Brown, the Democratic senator from Ohio, who's married to a journalist. And I enjoyed covering him. And it wouldn't terribly surprise me if he did a long shot candidacy for president in 2022.
What is it that you liked about Kasich? Because when I sort of watched him during the campaign, there are several of his policies that I couldn't stand. You know, as I recall, he's very conservative in certain areas, but he also seemed to have kind of a short temper or a dismissive sort of personality.
I would describe it this way. I think you're right. The way I would describe it is, I don't think he suffers fools gladly.
Yeah.
I remember the first time we sat down, very first interview, and we're doing the chit-chat while the camera's getting set up, and I could tell he was kind of testing me, like, who is this new guy?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to be able to keep up, yada, yada? And we got talking about Montana, where I'd worked for a summer, and he was familiar with the town of Babb, which is just outside Glacier National Park.
Yeah.
And I told him, I remember reading somewhere, that at one point there was a bar in Babb, a Babb bar, which was voted the most dangerous bar in America. And part of that was because a cowboy, assuming he was drunk or she was drunk, rode the horse into the bar. And in a kind of quirky sort of way, I think that impressed him. It's like, okay, I can deal with this guy. And then when we really bonded was I did a lot of work covering the heroin/opioid crisis.
Well, it was bad in Ohio.
In a way, I mean, West Virginia's bad, and so are, well, it's bad all over. But Ohio and Columbus, they're kind of centrally located on the route,
yeah.
You know, maybe from Mexico. Because Columbus is within, 500 miles of most of the country, or a lot of the population
really?
Of the country.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they had an opioid problem in southern Ohio. So I interviewed him a lot of times for that, and it kind of clicked.
Wasn't he, limousine liberals like me, didn't they lay a fair portion of the blame for that on his policies, on Kasich's policies? Do I remember that correctly? I'm just asking.
On opioids and heroin?
Yeah.
Not while I was there.
No.
When I was there, he was way out in front.
Okay. I misremember it.
And under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, depending on which way you address it, he was one of the few Republicans to take as much help from the government as he could. And a lot of that was to provide treatment for drug users.
So, Ohio. There it is. And then that part of your life ended. And you came back to Utah. And I'm curious as to why Utah. I know you spent a lot of time here, but you didn't grow up here. You grew up in?
Born in Chicago, and then grew up in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. I would think of you as an eastern sort of seaboard person.
Seaboard?
The eastern seaboard. Isn't that what they say?
I just had this image of me in kind of an Old Spice commercial, like getting off the ship with the bag.
You're not the Groton's fisherman, but, but you know, an eastern liberal. It's like, I think Mitt Romney wants to be a senator. Somebody said it on the Van Oker group, which we will get to. I think somebody said, maybe it was me.
No, it was your friend Dave Owen.
Was it that said, I think the reason he wants to be a senator is so he doesn't have to live in Utah. He can go back. Because that's what he's used to. He's used to the East, Boston. And yeah, it's where he grew up. It's where he likes to be. So why you, Utah?
You're right. I was a diehard Easterner. But after my freshman year in college at Northwestern, I went back to Chicago for schooling. I spent a summer working in Glacier National Park in Montana. That's how I knew about the Bad Bar. And I just became hooked on the West. And when I graduated from college, I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do, but I knew I wanted to be out West.
That has happened to a lot of people I know. They come out here and they go, holy shit. Very close friend of mine.
I can breathe out here. Oh, my God.
He was a
some days.
He was from... yeah, well,
metaphorically, not literally.
A friend of mine was from upstate New York and always was... He was sort of an outdoors person. He liked the rugged outdoors of upstate New York, which is, you know, people say New York here and that you think, well, New York City, but there's parts of New York that are wild and...
You know, Bill, there are more cows in New York State than people.
I didn't know that.
That's something people say.
And there are a lot of bears in New Jersey, but... So he was a theater director. I met him in theater school in Pennsylvania, and he came out here to direct a play at the Utah Shakespeare Festival, and went, huh? And he got out of the theater after a couple of years, and went back to school and became a park ranger. I'm not kidding you. Just a horribly low-paid park ranger. You know, with the hat and everything, the Smokey the Bear kind of hat, and then he became an environmental specialist for the Bureau of Land Management, and he was kind of an inside the establishment. He worked on the inside because he hated the BLM policies. But
it sounds like both an interesting guy and an interesting life.
Yeah,
was this the guy when I was a kid? You took me camping in that little campground you pass when you drive down to Vegas in Arizona in that canyon.
That's the best stretch of road.
Yeah. It's beautiful, but there's a little campground in that canyon.
Called Cedar Pocket.
And we thought it would be really cool to camp there.
It was.
It was awful. Yeah. It was so awful. It was there. The Virgin River goes right by it.
But it's a parking lot.
But it had dried up. Was no water in it.
It's a BLM campground.
There was no vegetation or shade, and we're in Arizona, and it's August, and it was miserable. So we abandoned it.
I didn't know how terrible it would be.
Yeah, it was bad.
We went up to St. George. We left.
You know, when I go to California to visit my folks, I go that route through Vegas, and that's my favorite stretch road because it's so pretty.
It's so pretty.
But now I know not to stop.
That little Cedar Pocket, you've seen the sign. Don't go there.
Don't stop at the campground. Just drive through.
Terrible, yeah. And we went up through. Dylan remembers this because we went up to St. George, and as it turned out, the BLM was having some kind of a conference there, and my friend, Chris Barnes is his name, was there at that conference, and we hung out with him a little bit, and then... And he is an interesting guy. He's retired now, actually. He helps his wife save buffalo in Lolo, Montana.
Lolo, Montana?
Yeah, Lolo. It's a little town close to the only hip town in Montana, the college town.
Bozeman?
No, not
Billings?
Bozeman. No.
Pullman?
No.
What's the other side of Pullman, Washington, Montana? I don't know.
There's a college there.
Do you want me to look up colleges in Montana?
It's not Kalispell. No. It's certainly not Babb.
No. Anyway, it doesn't.
I'm still
matter.
Looking up the New York statistic I quoted earlier.
I'm suspicious of that, by the way.
I have it. Do you want to know? Yeah. I have a list of every state and how many cattle they have versus
Missoula?
How many people.
Did we talk about Missoula?
It's Missoula. So it's outside of Missoula, and his wife has been into saving buffalo. And
you know, I'm a big Anthony Bourdain fan.
Sure.
And he did a show there, and I forget the name of the writer he spent some time with who died shortly after the filming. But the other great writer that lives there is Thomas McGuane.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's writes sort of Western novels.
And he's got a new book of short stories, which is either out or coming out.
And there have been movies. He's had a lot of his books made into movies, I think. So, Chris Van Oker.
Hang on. My New York cow statistic?
Yeah.
Complete bullshit. Just fake news.
No, it's complete cow shit.
My bad.
Because I was thinking, how many people are in New York City? They're not more cows than that.
No.
There's like 2 million cows in New York State. Just a lot of cows. like 20 million people.
You see what we're doing here, how we're making this episode?
Yeah, and I'm fine with that.
It's just, we're just bullshitting with Chris Van
How's
Oper.
The toast?
Oh, my God, it's
can
great.
Can I try a bite of your toast?
Yeah.
And now you can it's see as great. We get closer to noon.
Oh, there's a line. We're at the Rose Establishment on 4th West, just about right 2nd South and 4th West on the corner, right across the street from the Sergeant Pepper mural, essentially. Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good.
And this is what Chris has most of the time. And you're not eating, are you?
Well, I've dominated the conversation so far.
No, you haven't. You should be eating. Look, I've dominated
Look at
the conversation.
You. Skin and bones. You should eat.
And I've...
You know, is that a fat joke, Chris?
Let me talk.
Were you?
Fat
I'm so
shaming.
Proud of you. Are you no. fat shaming Bill?
No, he's not. I didn't take it that way.
Bad cop.
Oh, it would have made me like you more.
Good cop.
So, you know, you talked a little bit about being Jewish, but not particularly observant or anything. But you, I know you developed. Where did I read this, or did you tell me about this? You developed an interest in the. Holocaust, because you're a relative, somebody in your family was there in World War II. Is that right?
Yeah, mid-30s on my mother's side. Her parents, she was born in Vienna, Austria. So this is after Hitler had come to power in Germany and started encroaching on the other areas. It was becoming pretty apparent what was happening. And they had a program started in England, Great Britain, called, I think, the Kinder Transport. And what it was is they would accept, I think it was up to 10,000 Jewish refugees from Europe. They would let them go in to England and put them with foster parents. But the parents couldn't come with them.
Well, that's horrible.
So when my mother was about 15 or 16, she was one of the last groups in the Kinder Transport program to go from Europe to England. So she got out, but her parents didn't, my grandparents.
Yeah.
And I started, my mother passed away before I could really ask her about this, but I got interested in it and I started researching it, almost like I was a reporter, you know, mm-hmm. used reporting skills. And I made significant headway working with a group in Europe. And then I formed a partnership with the LDS Church. And they were able to get some more information, which I could take to the Red Cross. And between all of us, we finally figured out what happened, which unfortunately was they ended up at Auschwitz.
Oh, Jesus. Or not Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you go over there?
I did. After I made that discovery, I did a story on it. And I went over with my camera and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And went there, did the story. And I was literally numb for about 3 weeks afterwards.
Is that a story it aired here?
Yeah, I think this is when I was still with Channel 4.
Is it available on online? Do you know?
I don't know. They've changed ownership, so I'm not sure what's available and what's not. But I also wrote a story about my researching the journey when I went to Germany in Berlin for City Weekly.
And that's available, sure.
And that's
that's where I got this information. Yeah. I read that. Yeah. I was trying to remember where I'd come up with this to ask you this question, and I read it in City Weekly.
Yeah, I don't normally admit this, but I'm friends with John Saltis.
Don't admit it.
Too late.
Oh, jeez.
And
you're going to make me edit something out of this podcast later.
I've written just one thing. So I've written a couple articles for City Weekly now, and this amuses me no end. I'm actually doing some pieces for their outdoor magazine, Vamoose. And I think everyone at this table and in the listening audience will agree that I am the least outdoorsy person, certainly in Utah, maybe everywhere.
That would be my impression, yes.
I don't know, Chris. I don't like the outdoors very much.
Yeah, Dylan doesn't really care for it either.
Nope.
You went camping, though.
A bit.
I made us leave and go to a hotel. That was the point.
No. You're back here. You're doing a little writing. When I called you up to talk about the possibility of doing the Van Oker Group, which you used to do on TV once a week? Was it once a week?
Yeah, every Sunday.
Every Sunday. And for how long was the Van Oker group around?
I think we did it for almost 20 years.
And I got to be on it sometime toward the end of that 20-year period. But I guess I was on it for 2 or 3 years.
You're one of the few people that I know who still has a Van Oker group mug.
Yes, I do. And do you have one?
Not anymore.
Really?
Well, maybe
what happened to it?
Maybe when the podcast takes off, we'll order a new batch.
Maybe. It was from the Helen, the mug lady. Why do I couldn't think of Missoula, but I can remember Helen the Mug Lady. I don't know. So, if you would like, you know, I love that mug, but I would give it to you if you wanted it.
That is a sweet gesture, but I'm going to let you have it.
So you're going to let me have it.
I'm going to let you have it.
So when I called you with the possibility of doing the Van Oker group again with a podcast, you said you were semi-retired. When you say that, what do you mean?
What I think is, and this is a recent realization, I'm not very good at being retired.
Did you try to do full retirement?
This is the second time I've tried it. Now I've got 3 semi-part-time jobs, the podcast, writing for Vamoose in my flannel. And I think like you, I signed on with Urban Talent Management. The owner, one of the owners, Tina Bullen, is a dear friend, and she just got in touch with me and said, if you want some gigs, I think I can find you some stuff. And I do that every once in a while.
You know what I would think would be a great gig for you? I was just thinking this today.
Barista?
You should try stand-up comedy, and I'm not kidding. I think you would be a brilliant stand-up comic.
What's scary is, every now and then I think about that.
Can you say funny things in a very dry, offhand way. Sometimes people don't even notice that you're doing it.
I was lucky growing up because humor was one of the things that was appreciated in our house. And I remember many Saturdays, my dad and my brother and I, we'd go down to this funky theater movie house in Georgetown, maybe called the Biograph. And we'd go see W.C. Fields movies, Marx Brothers, and then at home we'd listen to, was it the 2,000-year-old man?
Yeah, Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. Mm-hmm.
And so humor was always appreciated. And for better or worse, not everybody loves my dry sense of humor. In fact, most not.
Mm-hmm.
But that was always important.
You know why I also think that? Is that...
I'm funny looking?
Kind of. What I'm going to say is you also, this is not the way people would think of you, I think, normally, but if they really sit and talk to you and watch you, your face is very animated.
It's funny. Like you, I used to do a lot of charity gigs, MC.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I think I might have peaked at was a roast for Rocky Anderson when he was mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the Rose Wagner. And it was great because they allowed drinks in the theater, so the audience was
get them lubricated.
Boiled.
Yeah,
and I did some jokes, and it worked. And then I vividly remember this: I was talking with a group of friends, and a couple women walked by, and they said, "Great job, great job." And this one woman looked at me and said, "Chris Van Oker, funny. Who knew?"
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was a great backhanded comment.
That could be the title of your first stand-up album.
Funny. Who knew?
Funny. Who knew?
I'm Chris Van Oker. Funny. Who knew? It's, by the way, emceeing gigs. I do a lot of those, as you said. And I actually took one over that you used to do. And I've done it three years in a row now, or four, for the Contemporary Museum of Contemporary.
Oh, Yomoka?
Yomoka.
That's a good gig.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. And I think I've done it 3 years now. That's, you know, the way those go. They kind of like what you do, and then they just ask you back year after year after year, and you do them, and it's fun. Stand-up comedy. I think it would be great if you tried it, but to me, now I'm in public all the time. I'm MC stuff. I'm on the radio. But stand-up comedy, I think, would be the most terrifying thing of all, and I've never really tried it. And I don't think I ever would.
I remember somewhere among the amazing things you can find on the internet, I found a panel discussion, and I only remember a couple of them. It was Seinfeld was there, and maybe Chris Rock, and a couple others. And they were talking about, Gary Shandling, who I love.
Oh, yeah.
They were talking about kind of the art of stand-up, how you prepare, what it's like being up there, how you deal with hecklers, and just how it's constantly new material. They were saying if you're a musician at a concert, you can play the stuff you've been playing for years and they want to hear it,
mm-hmm.
but you can't tell the same joke twice.
Yeah, it gets pretty stale fast. I read a piece somewhere, might have been Esquire or something, and they sort of profiled Jerry Seinfeld while he was preparing for stand-up, and he has yellow legal pads, and he writes everything out, and then he'll cross words out. You know, no, that's not the right word to use, and he's very meticulous about all of that.
I thought you were going to talk, because I think there's a picture, maybe of him or another comedian, I'm pretty sure it's him. It was kind of in New York, near where he started, and they had him surrounded, because he keeps a lot of his old notes, and he was just surrounded by this sea of old jokes.
Oh, I haven't seen that. It's a picture I could look up.
I think
up.
So.
Yeah.
In that documentary they did about the comedian, she's passed now, she died in the operating room, Joan Rivers. You go into her apartment in Manhattan, and she has a whole room that's just file cabinets, and it's note cards. And she's like, this was a joke I told. This one goes back to 49. And she had stored and cataloged every joke she told in her entire career in this wall of, like, little file cabinets.
Was that Seinfeld's The Comedian?
No, I think this was a... Was
this
it about...
This was, a, just, was just okay. about Joan Rivers. Just a documentary about her. It's on Netflix. It was pretty incredible. She was one of those comedians who just cataloged and wrote everything down.
So I want to talk about the Van Oker Group. And I'll tell you, I had a dream about it last night, as a matter of fact.
Was I clothed?
Yes, you were. That was kind of the first thing. I don't know if we'd ever... I guess we had officially met, but I started talking about you on the radio and said that I'd seen you naked, Chris Van Oker naked. And I didn't clear that with you. With you, because I never do that sort of thing.
Well, I have X96 spies, and if you or that mean Gina talks about me, they text me immediately.
Yeah. So, I don't think I actually did see you naked ever, but we just went to the same gym.
Partially.
So you change in the locker room, but I didn't ever really. But it was fun to say, yeah, I've seen Chris Van Oker naked. Anyway, so the Van Oker Group, very... Your signature, that and the back room. That's the news from the back room when you're doing your political coverage. Did you use that in Ohio as well?
No, that kind of got retired here. I remember early on when we started doing that, it kind of caught on. It was kind of explaining what happened at the Capitol, but not in the usual kind of political pundit sort of way. It was kind of explaining some of the dirty stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the maintenance people really liked it. So he actually sketched on the press room glass door, the back room.
Oh, cool.
Which didn't sit well with some of the legislators.
I would think. So those two are your signature pieces. And so I thought, Chris is back in town. I would call you up and say, how would you like to do the Van Oker Group as a podcast? And I was really pleased that you seem to be pleased and kind of touched that I reached out to you to do that.
This is all true.
Yeah.
As you and I have talked about, when I do some of that, I've been doing quite a bit of traveling lately, and I've kind of gotten into the habit, which I really enjoy, of just driving places. I've been out to California a couple times, just went up and down the coast. And last year, I went through the South, because there were about four or five states I hadn't been to yet. And what I did is I retraced part of my dad's civil rights reporting, places he had been. And we can talk about that in a bit.
Yeah.
But on the way, I got hooked on podcasts. I really like The Axe Report, David Axelrod, mm-hmm. Stay Tuned with Preet, and of course, Let's Go Eat and The Geek Show.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And How I Built This. And so your timing, in addition to being a very nice gesture, was spot on because I had just gotten into
podcasts. Sort of gotten into the world of it. And we've only done one episode of the Van Oker Group so far. And it was, and I guess the, well, I don't guess, I know that the objective at this point is to do one a month, which isn't a lot. But we can talk about that later, maybe bumping it up a little
bit. Yeah, Dylan and I talked about that a little bit, yeah. And it was, immodestly, it was pretty well received, except for one snarky comment by Bill Frost.
Oh, what did he say? I don't know.
I'm going to have to paraphrase here. It was something.
He's always snarky about everything.
That's what
course.
We love about
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
It was something like, I listened to the first podcast. I didn't learn a thing. I wasn't moved in any direction. The magic is back.
Keep it up, guys.
I disagree, Chris. Let's put that on the fucking poster.
Yeah. Yeah. We should find that and put it.
Wasn't
post
moved.
It.
We'll quote it to Bill.
Didn't
Bill
learn
Frost.
Anything. Bill Frost says of the Van Oker, the magic is back. Yeah.
Didn't learn anything. Wasn't moved. The magic's back. Bill Frost.
I really loved doing it. I thought it was fun. Bruce Baird, of course, and Dave Owen, and Chris Van Oker and myself. I thought it was great.
Now, many people who are listening to this right now have heard that episode, or have had the chance to, because we released it. As a special Let's Go Eat Show episode 1 week.
Right. So, but I had a dream last night that you, I don't know where we were. We were at some sort of a broadcasting facility.
Sauna.
Yeah. And there was a sauna and wine, and I said, hey, Chris.
And you were rubbing oil into Dave's.
You want a hot tub? Let's go hot tubbing. But you came to me and you said, you know, Bill, the Van Oker Group podcast has gotten extremely, you know how popular it is now. And I said, yeah, I know. It's great. And you said, I think we have to make a change, and the change would be you. I want to bring in someone else to be in the group. And, thanks for all the help and all of that. And then I think in the dream also it was that someone had offered you a boatload of money or something to do the podcast for them. And I thought, well, okay. You know, I mean, I felt bad about that, but I thought, well, that's the way it goes. That's the way things happen sometimes.
Number one, thank you for dreaming of me. Don't do it again. Two, boatload of money. No, we're in negotiations, but nothing's been signed. And three, about replacing you. I want to make clear that was Dylan's idea, not mine.
Okay.
I like that I'm still producing the very successful podcast.
Well, you know, thanks you guys. It's been nice.
Yeah.
I'll just stick to my little radio show. I do hope, and I think it has the potential, the Van Oker Group, to be very well received and do well.
As you know, when we were kicking around ideas for names for the podcast, one of them was, which I still think is funny, and I use as my tag out, don't eat this pod. Another one, which we talked about, was Politics for Dumb Guys. Mm-hmm. And that actually happened to one of the old group members. I think it was Dave Spadafore, got a delivery from UPS or FedEx. And the guy looked at him and said, oh, I know you. You're on that Sunday TV show. I like that. It's Politics for Dumb Guys Like Me, which I thought was great.
Yeah. That is. And, you know, when I was on the TV with you doing that, I got recognized all the time for that. People who had no idea I did a radio show, they say, oh, I've seen you on that TV show, haven't I? That Sunday morning show, though. Yeah, and I say, yeah, I thought that was great.
What we found was we didn't have the biggest audience, but the people who watched were the politicos, the politicians, the staff, lobbyists. Mm-hmm. Some of the candidates, and so that's in a way kind of who we wanted to reach.
Well, I'm just hoping that it is so successful that maybe you will have to think of replacing me. But and you can keep Dylan as a producer and pay him a lot of money if that ever happens. Okay,
I agree with all that. All right. I agree with everything said. I think it'll be fine.
How was the cookie, by the way?
It was delicious.
Yeah, I want. Do we know if they make them here?
They do.
They do make them
here.
Here being the Rose Establishment where we're talking to Chris Van Oker. And so I want to ask you about your and please everybody stay in touch with us. Another Van Oker group coming soon.
What do we decide? The last
tape a week from today.
A week from today, but we release it the last Thursday of the month or something?
It drops the last Thursday
that's
of every
what,
month.
Yeah, that's what they have to say. It drops.
I'm the producer. I should know when it drops.
Yeah. Well, you'll look.
I'll figure it out.
So, and I do, again, I just hope it's great, successful, because I think you're great on it, and it was really fun to do. Now, I want to ask you just a couple of other things before we wrap up here. Let's talk about your semi-retirement and what you're doing about writing about your father. Your father, I knew who he was immediately, and I used to watch him. I remember him. I was pretty young, but I remember his heyday of his reporting, Sander Van Oker. And he did a lot of great work and won awards, and he was a great newsman. So talk about him a little bit and what you're hoping to do with the book about him.
Well, thank you for your kind words about him. As I tell people, and I've told you, I raised him well.
Yeah.
Dad, really his heyday was in the 60s when he was on NBC News. And that was during the Huntley-Brinkley report, which I just love.
Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
I believe Chet was from Montana.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think that was really, I mean, he had a long career, 30, 40 years, but that was really when his star shined the brightest.
Yeah.
And probably in part because of the stories he covered, there was his favorite story of all time, civil rights. And in 1967, you can find it online, he did that documentary for NBC. It was about the splintering of the civil rights group. You had Dr. King and the more moderate members. And then you had the emergence of some of the more, what they called radical members, things like Black Power.
Malcolm X.
Yeah, and my dad interviewed Dr. King in 1967, about 4 years after the I Have a Dream speech.
Jeez.
And they did the interview in Dr. King and his father's church in Atlanta, which I believe is now either a national historic site. But I went there last summer and I actually found the spot where they did the interview. And it's interesting to me because there was something in the interview, and I'm a little surprised it hasn't gotten more attention. Maybe it's because it's so long ago. But Dr. King told my dad that just a few years later, in a way, his dream had become a bit of a nightmare, that perhaps he had been too idealistic about some of the things he wanted to achieve. And I think this coincided with the slight splintering of the civil rights movement and the fact that Dr. King was trying to address some of the economic issues, which still exist today. And as you remember, when he went north to hold some of his protests and meetings, et cetera, it didn't necessarily go as well.
And plus, as I recall, he talked about that, and he was starting to really get into stopping the Vietnam War and anti-war.
That's a really good point, because the interview with my dad took place a couple weeks after, I think, he gave the speech in New York where he came out against the war. Mm-hmm. And Johnson, who had been supportive of civil rights, was obviously not happy about that.
Yeah.
That was my dad's favorite interview and his favorite issue to cover. But he went from there to covering the Vietnam War.
Did he go over?
He was there twice in 65. I remember him coming back and he bought us little trinkets from Vietnam, T-shirts and such. And I don't know if it was years ago, but there was a HBO special, Letters from Home, something like that. And they had different actors and actresses reading the letters that people had written. Mm-hmm. And they intersplice that with old NBC News clips. And I saw it at Sundance, and I didn't know it was happening or that he was in it. But all of a sudden, there was my dad sitting on a boat, small boat on the beach in Cameron Bay. And he talked about the escalation of troops. And the phrase he used was, it's beginning to take on a look of permanence here. And he was pretty far-sighted about that. And on one of the trips, when he was leaving Vietnam, he looked out the window and watched Vietnam disappear as he flew away. And he started to cry because he knew what was going to happen. My dad had been in military intelligence, and I think he studied some of this.
Oh, you mean before he was in news?
Yeah, in Europe, in Germany.
Cold War. That's where he met your mother.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so he had a good sense about that, and he'd seen what had happened with the French in Vietnam, which wasn't good.
Yeah.
And one of his few regrets career-wise is, even though he had been pretty critical of the war, and he thinks that's part of the reason he ended up on Nixon's enemies list, is he wishes he had been tougher.
I've heard or read other people in similar positions about Vietnam say things like that. But McNamara, with the fog of war, Robert McNamara, my God. You know, that he had a change of heart way too late, I think. But
you know, I think there's also a Vietnam documentary, which my dad did, because I remember him interviewing General Westmoreland on the plane.
William Westmoreland.
And I think if you look, you can find that on the internet as well.
How did his career? I mean, I would think of that just what you've described there, just these few instances. It was what you would describe as an illustrious career. Did it end well for him?
You know, it's funny. Obviously, I was aware of a lot of the things he did. But I really learned quite a bit more a few years ago when I retired, or tried to. And I went to California and I helped organize his study. And bless him, he never threw anything away.
Good.
I found car insurance notes from the early 60s. Well, it was very affordable. But I also found a lot of his old scripts, including from Vietnam and the civil rights. And I was able to kind of piece together the arc of his career. He was planning on being a lawyer.
After this?
Getting out of school.
Oh, I see.
But when he was studying in England, London School of Economics, and his roommate was the New York Senator Daniel Moynihan.
Daniel Patrick.
And my dad saw something in a paper which he disagreed with, so he wrote a fairly lengthy opinion page rebuttal. And the way he phrased it is, once he saw his name in print, he was forever lost to the world of law.
There's something satisfying about that to him.
Yeah, and he went from there, and he worked for the New York Times for a few years, then NBC, then PBS, and ABC, worked for the Washington Post, too. And really, the end of his TV career, he did some special reports and documentaries, but he also did, I can't remember if it was called Movies in Time, something like that, for the History Channel. So they would watch a historical movie and then have guests to talk about it. And I was lucky. I was back in New York, and I got to go listen to him. They were playing All the President's Men.
Oh, really? That was
and
one
Ben
of the
Bradley was in the studio.
Oh, the editor of the Post.
Yeah, and that was just awesome.
Yeah. And so your dad was the host and the interviewer. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And that was that the right at the end of his career? Did he retire?
And maybe this is where I get it from. He never really retired. He served on some boards. He served with some foundations. Mm-hmm. Continued to give speeches. Did History and Time. And then when you did these retrospective pieces, like CNN did a long series on the 60s, which was pretty good.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Because my dad had been there for civil rights, for Vietnam, for Kennedy, for Nixon. They used him a fair amount.
So he never really retired, but at a certain point you stop.
Yeah, I mean,
you just stop.
They live in a very pretty area of California, and he stays active, reads two or three papers a day, watches news, sometimes critiques it.
Yells at the TV.
Yeah. So I'm not sure you ever lose it.
Yeah. The book you're writing about him, how's that going? And I mean, I'd read it in a second.
That's one.
Yeah.
You'd listen to the audiobook.
I'd listen to the audiobook.
Yeah.
After the podcast.
Is it going well? Is it, are you?
So that's why I mentioned helping him organize his study, because while I was going through all that, the reporting part of me kind of kicked in. I was like, as you mentioned, this is a pretty incredible life and career.
Yeah.
And I got the idea for that. And it's progressing slowly. It takes a while to find your voice. At first, I thought I'd do a traditional biography. I got a fair ways into it, but it wasn't working. And then I thought, well, let's focus on the heyday, the 60s, the stories I mentioned and the people. And that got me closer. And then as I had other people read it and kind of make suggestions, it became apparent that I'd say about 80 or 90% of the book is about him. And then maybe a little bit about me and how my career paralleled his in certain places. Becoming a political reporter.
That starts to kind of work, doesn't it?
It does, and it helps me get the voice and figure out the vehicle for getting there.
Well, I can't imagine trying to write a book, but I guess if you're semi-retired, you can work on it a little bit. But do you say, okay, today, every day I'm going to work on the book for this amount of time? And
well, you know what a carefree, spontaneous life I lead.
Right.
Which fooled no one here at the Rose Establishment. It depends. Sometimes I get up early and write, and then other times I kind of enjoy writing at night. I don't know whether you ever read, and please, I'm not comparing myself to him at all, but did you read Springsteen's autobiography?
I haven't. I heard it's great, though. And he wrote it. He didn't. I mean, he had people, you know, punch it here and there, but editors, but it's not ghostwritten.
You know, this is one aspect of why I'm not the brightest guy around, but I was reading it, and I was like, well, of course he writes well. Listen to his music and the lyrics. Mm-hmm. But he just kind of wrote it when he got a chance, and it took him 7 or 8 years. So in the beginning, I was like, well, I'd like to finish this in a year or two, and now I'm just kind of letting it go its course.
Mm-hmm. I want to sort of wrap things up here, and I'm going to ask you a personal question, but not a personal question.
I'm sorry, my headphones aren't working.
As we have, anybody who's met you and knows you a little bit would say, Chris, you call yourself the News Vulcan.
I believe Kerry came up with that.
Oh, did he?
I think so.
Huh. I think you're right. And you use that.
I think he came up with it when you were trekking in Nepal.
Oh, when you were on the show, right.
Yeah. And your comment immediately calling in was, Van Oker again?
So you are, so by saying you're the News Vulcan, you keep things close to the vest. You don't wear your heart on your sleeve in any way that I have ever seen. You lead a private life, and that I respect, and I'm not asking you anything about that. All I want to know is, how did you become that way? Have you always been that way? Do you know?
I can't even remember why I did this, but I took one of those personality tests online, the famous one with the four letters.
Oh, yeah.
Not the personality disorder
test.
That's a whole different podcast.
Yeah, I don't think we
want
to do it.
And I want to say I came up INTJ. I'm not sure I got that right. But the description was somebody who approaches life from a very analytical/logical perspective.
Like a Vulcan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And you've always, I mean, do you remember as a kid being, because I know, I've known very young people who are like that. They sit back and they watch and they listen and they...
No, I remember pretty clearly coming out of the womb, observing the doctor, and offering a gentle critique about the procedure. And if I remember correctly, he tried to put me back in.
I think maybe that's a good place to end.
Didn't this go so much better than the first one?
Yes.
I'd say you redeemed yourself.
Yeah, this has been excellent. I think I would say it's my great approach of really not trying to get anything personal out of you, which I think I was doing the first one. And you just would dance around the questions, and because you don't want to do that.
Well, like a Vulcan, I think I put up, what are these shields they use when they're being attacked by the Klingons?
Shields?
Yeah, shields.
I thought it had a more exotic name.
No, it's just
walls?
Shields. Yeah. It's shields.
Force field.
How about the cone of silence?
Like well, that was Get Smart, yeah.
Like Neil Get Smart. One of the funniest bits ever, I thought.
A window.
I actually got to see one of those taped.
You went to a taping of Get Smart?
Well, my dad, this would have been in the 60s, my dad worked for NBC, so he had access to things like that, and we saw Get Smart. I think I saw the Flip Wilson Show, the Andy Williams Show.
I was thinking about the Flip Wilson Show just the other day, just because he was one of the most popular comedians of the day, and nobody ever really references him or talks about him anymore.
No, he's a very nice guy.
Do you even know who Flip Wilson is?
No, and I don't think I forget a name like Flip Wilson.
You know what's his name does now? Madea.
Tyler Perry.
Flip Wilson did this character Geraldine in drag, and he was very funny and much better than Tyler Perry. But anyway, he was a very nice guy.
Before you guys wrap this up, I want to thank you both for having me on ill-advisedly for a second time, and thank you for your help with the podcast. And I also want to thank Rose Establishment, the staff, and my Facebook friend Erica, who's the owner.
Yeah, this has been a great place. We've kind of tied up a table, but they've been very accommodating because it is a busy, busy place here at lunch. Oh. And they're only open for breakfast and lunch, not dinner?
I think they're open until about 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Yeah. And as I said, you think it's busy now. When it gets warm and it's the weekend, get here early.
And you'll see Chris Van Oker here hogging a table.
Yep.
Hogging a table.
And we've been doing so well.
Chris, it's really a pleasure. I think the Van Oker Group podcast will do very well, and I'm excited to do more of them. And thanks for being on this podcast.
And you've got my word. It's going to take a huge offer to get me to leave.
Okay. All right.
Deal.
That sounds great. That's it for the Let's Go Eat Show. Thanks, Dylan, for producing the show. And again, I'll echo Chris's thank yous to the Rose Establishment. This is a great place. I will come back here. And that's it. Remember, if you're pouring the drinks, always make mine a double.
Broadway Media Podcast Network.